psychologist and author Dr. James Dobson, the voice you trust for the family you love.
Well, my relationship with Shirley has been one of the highlights of my life. Something precious happened in those childhood years, and I can't recover one of them.
Well, what do you think we were doing at home?
You can be sure we were on our knees.
This is Family Talk with Dr. James Dobson, along with Ryan Dobson and Luann Crane.
Well, thanks for tuning into this Tuesday edition of Family Talk, as we're going to hear the second half of a conversation that took place here a couple of weeks ago. We had three surgeons who have these incredibly compassionate hearts for the people of Africa who, as we heard, are in desperate need of medical care. Ryan, why don't you go ahead and introduce them and explain who was here last time?
No problem, Luann. We are listening to Dr. Roy Stringfellow. He's a gynecologist here in Colorado Springs in private practice. He's married to Carolyn Stringfellow. She was a flight attendant for United Airlines for 36 years. Mm-hmm. We're also hearing from their daughter, Dr. Caroline Hedges, and her husband, Dr. Jeremy Hedges. He is in his fifth year of residency in general surgery.
Mm. Again, for those that didn't hear our program yesterday, the Stringfellows and the Hedges returned recently from Tenwick Hospital in Kenya, Africa. Doctors Jeremy and Caroline Hedges had been there for 10 months, and the Stringfellows went over to serve with them for 3 weeks. Mm. That's kind of complicated when you don't have the visual to explain it.
But there is a photo, Doctor, online at myfamilytalk.com. They can kind of get everybody in their mind that way.
Yeah, you know, it's a neat photo, too. It was taken in another studio because we couldn't get everybody into this small little temporary.
You call your office a studio.
I like calling my office a studio. That's nice. Yeah, we're in a little temporary studio today, but that group was so large that we moved to my office with a table and a bunch of chairs and mics.
Great.
Well, if our listeners out there are captivated by what they're about to hear, and I believe they will be, as our listeners yesterday mm-hmm. were, they may want to go online to our website to see the people who were talking. That will make it more clear. Our interview again today focuses on the experience of these folks in Kenya. Remember now that three of them are surgeons, and then there's Carolyn Stringfellow, who was there also, and she worked in the hospital as well. And they're going to describe the calling that they have heard from the Lord to spend most of their lives as medical missionaries in a land where trained physicians are few and far between. And as I said last time, what the Stringfellows and the Hedges are doing is a labor of love in the name of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm. It was very inspiring. And again, if someone did not listen to that, they can go back and hear that audio at myfamilytalk.com. So let's get right to that conversation. We'll start out by hearing from Dr. Jeremy Hedges, getting to know him a little bit better as he talks about what first pulled his heart towards missions.
Yeah, it started on a short-term mission trip to Mexico, and that was the first time I had ever seen poverty. And it just, right then, God started working on me that this would be my calling, to work with the poor. And then it was a few years later that I ended up doing some medical work in Port-au-Prince, Haiti, and I just fell in love with it. Medicine is not in my family like it is in Caroline, so it was a new experience for me. But once I experienced it, I fell in love with it, and God really just opened all the doors from there to get into medical school and to go into surgery and everything else.
Yeah. Yeah. What's it like, Caroline, to have a patient who is desperately in need of your care walk for hours, half a day on muddy roads to get to you? To need your help so desperately.
Oh, you know, Dr. Dobson, it's unimaginable to me what these women would go through. Mm-hmm. Now that I've been through labor with Clara, do you imagine after labor starts to start walking mm-hmm. or take a many, many hour journey or labor at home and then the baby's stuck and you've been in labor for 2 days and then come? it just blows my mind what they go through.
There's no motorized transportation, no ambulances.
It depends. Yeah, there's no 911 service. So if you get into trouble, you hope that you're near a road because there are some vehicles. Most of the transportation is actually on motorcycles. I also can't imagine riding a motorcycle in labor. But yeah, these women would come in from far, far away, and they were always so grateful that they had this opportunity to live. And most of the women there had actually lost a baby or two, and so they knew the risks. And that was so rewarding to be able to have the tools to help women in need.
Mm-hmm. Roy, you told me on one of our hunting trips about the problem with fistulas in Africa and other places. I don't know if our listeners can stay with you through the details of that, but explain as best you can what goes on there and why you are particularly concerned about those women.
Right, and actually my daughter is very concerned about that too. I think that's one reason she's going into OBGYN. It's sadly a much too common scenario in Africa. Very often, marriages will occur at 11, 12, 13 years of age. These little girls get pregnant. They're not fully developed. They have absolutely no medical care. They may be days away from a hospital. And they'll go into labor, and the baby will not fit. And they may labor for days until finally the baby dies, and then the fetus begins to shrivel and shrink, and finally it can pass. But meanwhile, there's been so much pressure down in the vaginal area that the blood supply has been cut off to parts of the bladder or parts of the rectum. And when the baby comes through, then those parts of the bowel or the bladder or sometimes both then develop these huge holes that will not heal. And these patients then pass urine or feces vaginally. And it's horrible. It smells terrible. They're ostracized. They build a hut for them away from everybody else. Their husbands divorce them, and they eventually just die.
They're almost like lepers, aren't they?
They are.
They're ostracized from the community.
Lepers.
It's horrible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And in Ethiopia, there's this wonderful hospital there that an OBGYN, two OBGYNs, husband-wife team, started that has specialized in fistula repairs, and it is very complicated. It is one of the toughest procedures you can do, and they've done a wonderful job with that. And so there's being some progress made, but there's such a tremendous need, and that's one thing that Caroline is very interested in, is learning how to do these fistula repairs.
Caroline, is this one of the things you feel called to treat?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Well, when I started medical school, I said, I'll do anything except OBGYN. Because I knew it was a crazy lifestyle and lots of up all nights. And but as I went through, I found that that was the thing that I loved. Yeah. And my third year of medical school, my dad told me about this book, A Hospital by the River, which tells the story of this hospital in Ethiopia and this couple that started it, and how they really were the first people to ever give treatment for fistula, which is primarily surgical. And so that was where I turned the corner of this was what I wanted to do with my life. And this is one of those few areas in medicine where you can give someone their life back. Mm-hmm. And it's so powerful to give physical restoration that can lead to the spiritual and emotional restoration of a person. And there's a fantastic movie, a non-medical movie, about this hospital. It's called A Walk to Beautiful by Engel Entertainment. You can get it on Netflix. And it's a documentary following five women who have fistula, and it's their journey of finding out that there is a cure, finding out that there is help, and how they get to the hospital and their experience there.
Does fistula always come about as the result of a loss of pregnancy? Explain that a little bit more. Your dad alluded to that.
Well, it's actually one of those problems that's very different in the developing world versus the developed world. Here in the United States, it's very rare to have fistula, and it's usually from surgery or radiation, Crohn's, things like that. But in the developing world, it's almost exclusively from obstructed labor. And 96% of the time, the baby dies.
I mean, what your dad just described, we're talking about a 11, 12-year-old little girl. I mean, I had one of those. You'll have one in a few years. and then it goes through this trauma. So that's not just physical. You're talking about this poor girl's soul. And then if she's rejected, look at all the ramifications of that.
Yeah.
Yeah. These women, when they die, they just die of grief.
Oh.
They just, nobody wants to be around them. They're ostracized, and they just finally curl up and die.
Mm.
And there are some beautiful stories that come out of it. One is a father whose daughter had this problem, and instead of ostracizing her, and they were days away from the hospital, and he carried her. And it's difficult because, you know, you're getting soiled the whole time and having to ride on a bus and people don't want to be near you and so forth. But he had heard about this hospital, and he carried her in there, and she got repaired.
Oh, goodness. Carolyn, you started to say something a minute ago.
I would like to address the call to the mission field. My aunt was a missionary to mainland China, and she was there when Mao said he was going to take Shanghai. My grandfather was not a believer when she went over in the 1930s. He did not become a believer till he was around 94 years old. And for that, I'm thankful. I had a very strong and very definite call in my life in high school to go to the mission field. And as the years went by and I never went, you start wondering what happened. But the traditional mission call is not for everyone. I've learned my call over the years. We took our children out of school one year to go to the Dominican Republic. And I said to Roy, Caroline and Clint may end up in missions in one way or another. And we need to do this, and we need to do it now. They were in 8th and 10th grade. And we say we've got two children on the mission field. Clint and his wife, Megan, are in Southern California. And then Caroline, for a while, was in Israel. And then Caroline and Jeremy were in Kenya. But I go to the mission field not as a physician. And Ryan, I don't know about you, but I feel rather dwarfed in my family. We're Clinton, yes, at this table also. Clint and Megan are graduates of your alma mater, Biola. Mm-hmm. And my educational level is from a while back. And then I have three physicians. Caroline has also a seminary degree. But I go on the mission field, and I can move bricks, and I can sling dirt, and I can paint. Mm-hmm. And, you know, kids can teach basketball clinics. There are a lot of things to do, and it took me a long time to realize that my calling was not 24/7. I remember the mission song, if just a cup of water I place within your hand, then just a cup of water is all that I demand. Jeremy was giving people a drink of water from a ceremonial cup, and they hadn't been able to drink, to swallow for a long time. I had that opportunity in the Dominican Republic when one of the guys making concrete was so thirsty, he asked just for a cup of water. And that's when it hit me that now, God, I understand my call.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think, Mom, you bring up a couple really good points about missions, in that it's not just in an international context that missions takes place, and just loving people where you are is showing the love of Christ. And then I think also you bring up the importance of that everyone has a place in missions, and the opportunity to go with your family is so phenomenal, to just experience that together. And I think especially for young people, the opportunity to see the world outside of the United States, because we think this is normal,
yeah.
When really we are living just light years ahead and above the level where most people are. It's a great experience to see what else is going on in the world. And we've talked a lot about how you can help change the world. So I'd really encourage families to, mm-hmm. if they get the chance, to go as a family. It doesn't matter how young your kids are. Mm-hmm. Like, our little girl was 5 months old when we went. My family went in junior high and high school, and they're wonderful experiences.
Yeah, I would like to encourage any physicians listening, if you've ever felt you would like to do a short-term missions, jump at the opportunity. It's really wonderful. And doesn't matter your specialty, there's always something that's very, very needed. And take your families with you.
Yes.
That's really important. They will really enjoy it, and they'll be able to serve.
That's one of the hidden reasons I wanted to do this program today. I would love it if there would be dozens or maybe hundreds of medical people and those with other skills who would reach out to those in need on a foreign field, because the need is so great. Luann, your father was a physician,
yes,
right?
Yes, he was. Yeah.
And so this is all very relevant to you, isn't it?
Well, it's very relevant, Doctor. I spent from the age of 3 to the age of 8 on a mission hospital in South Africa. My dad was a physician over there. Mm-hmm. And exactly what they're describing, it was a little mission station down near Isingelwane, South Africa. But what a seed that planted. You know, what we're hearing here, you listen to both Caroline and Jeremy, these seeds were planted in mission trips. You know, look at the families now who need to be taking their children, going with them. Look at what's been planted here in the lives of these. Were you a student, Jeremy? How old were you?
Yeah, it was during my undergraduate days.
Okay. You know, so you've got to reach these children and plant that seed at a young age.
Ryan, you've been on a number of mission trips too, haven't you?
Oh, yeah, a bunch. And you see, you know, this is the interesting thing about mission trips too. You do change lives where you go, but your life itself is so profoundly changed.
Yeah.
That then you tell other people about it. You have to keep telling. You've got to go, you know. And
well, when I mentioned going to Kenya, you were on that trip with your mom and me, and we were helping to build a school. And we were laying bricks.
That's right.
Everybody can find something to do.
Well, Caroline, I appreciate you saying that, because we have 3 physicians here, and that's the traditional way that we think we can only go as medical. Mm-hmm. I have a son right now who's a freshman in college here studying engineering, and already the Lord is laying it on his heart to be a humanitarian engineer and to go overseas. He says, Lord, you know, if you can use my math and my science to clean up sewers and get clean water and that kind of a thing, do my training here and let me go over and change lives. And he went on a mission trip in 7th grade to Guatemala, and I know the Lord planted that seed then. So don't overlook this time in your 7th to 12th grader's life.
You know something? The Spirit of the Lord is hovering here. We've all been in tears today because there is something here that touches the great heart of God. You know, he said, inasmuch as you do it unto the least of these, my brethren, you do it unto me. Boy, you talk about doing it unto the least of these in Africa, where people have to walk for hours or days to get a little bit of medical care. Someone who could put an arm around them and help them and ease their suffering. You know that that matters to God. You know that it does. And I do hope we're talking to some folks out there who are willing to make the sacrifices that the two of you have made. And you have chosen to give your lives to people who can't give you anything back. And that's impressive to me.
And Jim, it's very humbling to go in the mission field and to work in these hospitals and see how grateful the people are, and to realize how much we have back here and how much they don't have there. It's a very humbling experience.
I ask our listeners to be in prayer for you in the days ahead. Getting through residency, Caroline, as a mother of a 15-month-old and now a new baby, and all that a residency implies, is going to be tough. And if anybody can do it, you can, because I've watched you through the years. And Jeremy, I haven't known you as long, but you are one impressive guy. And to Roy and Carolyn, thank you for raising Caroline and Clint to love the Lord the way you have. Now, there's another aspect to this story that I guess I've shared a time or two, but it's highly personal to me, because in 1998 I had a stroke and could easily have died or been in a wheelchair the rest of my life. And I couldn't talk. I couldn't say anything. And surely bless her heart, she knew what to do. She did everything right. And she called this family right here, Roy and Carolyn, Dr. and Mrs. Stringfellow. They had been all day in the hospital with their own son who was having some very serious life-threatening problems. They'd been there all day. Shirley called and told them that I'd had a stroke. They turned around, didn't even go home, turned around, came to the hospital, spent the whole night with me. And 24 hours later, I was over it. The Lord was just so gracious to me. But I will always appreciate you guys for what you did for me and what you did for Shirley that night. Carolyn even, this is gross, cleaned up my vomit. I mean, a person who'll do that for you must love you or be a person who loves everybody in need. And I want to say it again, how much I appreciate what you did that night.
Well, it was an honor to be there, and I know Carolyn feels the same.
Well, one of the things I remember about that time was when you could first speak again. When my dad came back into the room the first time, the first thing you asked was how my brother was.
Yeah, that really was touching to me.
Well, you know, I couldn't speak all night, but I knew it. I knew what was going on, and I knew that that you had your hands full with Clint, and yet you cared about me, and I didn't understand that. And that is one of the first things I asked about when I saw you, because I was concerned about you, but.
Well, average person would be saying, when am I going to be able to walk again? Will I be able to think? Can I write ever? But no, you want to know about Clint. That really told me a lot about your character.
Well, on this Family Talk broadcast, we bring to a close 2 days of wonderful conversation with the Stringfellows and the Hedges. And, Doctor, I can see why you've grown to love these two families so much.
Mm-hmm. Well, Luann, I don't have a brother. I was an only child. And so I'm especially grateful for the friendship of Dr. Roy Stringfellow. And then, of course, our great regard for his wife, Carolyn. These are great people. They love the Lord, and they love people. You can hear it in their voices. And then, of course, Dr. Caroline Hedges, their daughter, and her husband, Dr. Jeremy Hedges, are just remarkable people, too. I mean, she is pregnant again, as we heard, yet she's going into a residency, and she will be there for a number of years, and then they're heading off to Africa again. There's only one reason you do that, and that's because you love Jesus and you love his people. And I love this interview. I hope our listeners did too. Now, Ryan, before we end the program, and we've got just 2 or 3 minutes left, and I would like you to describe what we have not seen, but we have heard it in your voice. In the interview that we just heard, they made reference to this problem with fistulas. I don't know how anybody could listen to that without being deeply touched. But there was a comment about a documentary on that medical problem that you went online and saw.
I did.
Tell us what you saw.
The documentary is called A Walk to Beautiful, and it follows a young girl who has the fistula problem. And it'll wreck you. You know, there's no other way for me to put it. I did it here at work, and I was a little embarrassed. I didn't want anybody to come in my office because you just are overwhelmed with the shame these women are feeling. Their families kick them out of their homes. She had a hut attached to the barn, so she lived with animals because her condition makes her smell. And it follows her bus ride that's hours and hours and hours, and she's leaking a little bit and bleeding a little bit, and she's scared. And, I mean, these women, from their voices, tell about the ostracization. It tells about the shame they feel. And then going through the surgery and becoming a new person, and there's a little ceremony where they give them new clothes. And they're given dignity. They're given humanity. And the look on their faces of new clothes, new life. I tell you what, it is so, so powerful. That's actually in the resources we list online at myfamilytalk.com.
And I hope that many of our listeners will find that documentary and see for themselves. You know what I really hope? I hope that there are many people listening to us right now who will say, I'm not a physician, although some may be, but I can do something. And I hear the call. I hear the call that the Stringfellows and the Hedges heard. And I would like to go there. Maybe it's a nurse. Maybe it's just a person without any medical training. But I can go there and I can sweep the floor. I can do something.
And don't ignore that call. Yeah. If that's you and the Lord is tugging on your heart, that's a calling and you've got to obey it. And they have so many resources and ways that you can help listed at our website, which is myfamilytalk.com.
Wouldn't it be something if many people would join in this great crusade, if you want to call it that, as a result of these two broadcasts? That would please me, and that's our prayer.
If the Lord has tapped you on the shoulder today, again, as Ryan said, myfamilytalk.com, or give us a call, 1-877-732-6825, 877-732-6825. This could be the beginning of something great for you and your family and a needy family in a foreign land.